Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
We kick off hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on Thursday. Going to be a lot like hour one. We're going to talk college football. Don't forget, beginning Monday, I'm on the floor there, SEC Media Days, 12 hours, all 4 days, and we will be – the reason I'm there and I'm only with y'all for 2 hours is it is a widely expanded schedule this year. Normally, there is a late start on the first morning because there are some folks who, you know, who are covering the event that just come in early that day, and so they may not start until like 10:30, 11 or so. And it's only three coaches the first day and the last day, and then they, you know, jam it up in the middle with four coaches each day. But it normally would have wrapped up most days, even the full days where they started like 8:30, 3 o'clock or so, everything's wrapped up. That is not going to be the case this year. The schedule is expanded quite a bit throughout the day, and there will actually be fewer, far fewer media credentials have been, and this was stated in advance. The SEC said they were going to issue far fewer media credentials. And so I'm really thankful for our coverage and what we'll be able to bring there. But like I said, you got to be down there the entire time because everybody's operating on their own schedule. And so maybe Matt Stinchcomb is coming through. Maybe Ed Ogeron's coming through. Tony Barnhart, Gary Danielson, they're on their schedule. And so you just got to be there. And I promise it's going to be four full jam-packed days. And then next Friday, we will just bring you a full recap and also going to be in Charlotte ACC Media Day. So just a lot of great coverage ahead. As far as the rest of today, Jake Wimberly, our good buddy from our Jackson ESPN affiliate, he's coming up in about 10, bottom of the hour. Nathan King from 247, he covers Auburn. Have we had Nathan on before? I don't believe I know
him. I don't believe we have.
All right. Well, I'm going to introduce myself to Nathan King at the bottom of this hour. Looking forward to it. Does a great job working with 24/7. So, again, that's coming up in about 20 right now. I'll get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm pain relief cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Well, I try to start with good news, and so this is good news for Brent Venables. Headline: Clemson makes defensive coordinator Venables highest paid assistant in college football. Clemson's Board of Trustees, the Compensation Committee, approved a contract extension for Venables. Goes through the end of the 2026 season. $2.5 million a year. Contract adds one more additional year. And then also $100,000 per year to his existing salary. So he gives a little bit of a raise, which means he is now the highest paid in America. Last year, Sark made more. Kevin Steele made more. Neither is still in their job that they had in 2020. Brent Venables is, and he's getting paid, and he's produced. Weird thing, he replaced Kevin Steele at Clemson. And they were both making $2.5 million last year. All right, I'm going to say this is good news. I like this. Bob Bowlesby has now said something that I actually agree with. Headline: Big 12 commissioner makes strong push for college football player vaccination. Well, the Big 12 commissioner is Bob Bowlesby, and the rest of that headline makes a strong push for college football player vaccination. Folks, that's self-explanatory. Now, I'm going to tell you why I like this, because you know where this goes, and he cited it as well. We talked 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. NC State. There are huge, huge sports fans, college football fans, ACC fans. There are some NC State fans who don't care about college baseball. If you're listening to this program right now, you care about college football. And Bob Bowlesby said, essentially, we all look at the example in Raleigh. and you don't want that to be your team come fall. Lincoln Riley spoke up, and he said, I'm going to tell you flat out. He says, I'm probably not supposed to say it this way because it won't be very politically correct, but I will consider whether you're vaccinated. Dan, did you see this? I will consider if you're vaccinated when it comes to the depth chart, because if you don't have your shots, that means I can't really count on you.
Well, I mean, he's not wrong.
No.
You're still open.
He said that you have to be tested, and that you may test positive, and suddenly on a Wednesday night, I lose my starting slot receiver. He didn't say, he didn't go positions. But he said, he says, folks, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to consider it in my depth chart. I have never discussed the vaccination or the virus or anything in political terms ever. And I've never understood those who have. It's not a party. It's not a Democrat or a Republican. It's not a Whig. It's not an independent. It's not a anything. It's this little diseased killer that flies through the air. So I agree with Bowlesby, absolutely, and Lincoln Riley. Speaking of Big 12, now, see, this is the opposite of it. Big 12 getting woke, you call it whatever you want. Headline, Big 12 officials aiming to crack down on taunting in 2021. You know what that means, first and foremost? If you saw an SEC headline, conference to crack down on artificial noisemakers, they're talking about one fan base. Who is it? Mississippi State. So no, we're just talking about everybody. If you say, hey, we're going to crack down on on-field taunting in the Big 12, what are you talking about? Horns down. Director of Officials, Greg Burks, at Big 12 Media Days, called it the, quote, gift that keeps on giving for Big 12 officials. The horns down symbol, a taunt directed at Texas, is now going to be a judgment player for the judgment call for the officials, folks. Listen to this. A judgment call for the officials considering intent and game situation. Let me put it this way, quote, if you do a horns down to a Texas player as an opponent, that's probably going to be a foul. If you turn to the crowd and throw the sign, it probably would not. He said, please, all of you note, I said probably. The official said, we're going to crack down on this, but we're not going to tell you exactly what will constitute a foul. So there you go. Big 12, consider yourself up to date. I have one more news item that I was going to include, but it's simply too big. And I will tease this for the end of the show. This will be my closing argument brought to you by the law offices of Alexander, Schnarr & Associates. There is one giant change afoot for a certain group of fans, and it begins next week in the conference. But first, we're going to take a break, come back, talk with a good friend, Jake Wimberly. That's next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Rolling through hour two on a Thursday, Chuck Oliver Show, 9 states, 51 sticks, dealing it out 2 hours a day. Been doing that since the beginning of the 14th season, so I appreciate everybody putting that blessing in my life. Want to head out to the radio now. Good friend of mine, good friend of the program, afternoon drive host at a great station, ESPN 105.9 yonder in Jackson, Mississippi. Jake Wimberly, how you doing, brother?
Chuck, doing good. How are you? We're another day closer to kickoff in college football.
You ain't kidding. I'm so looking forward to it, especially next week, getting cranked up there in Hoover. I want to go backwards before we start talking about this year's team. And, you know, Mississippi State, they're an SEC program, and it's a real program. They put guys into the league. Three first-round picks just on defense in 2019. Now, those are the only three first-round picks that the program has put into the league over the last decade. It's not the end-all, be-all. Like, Chris Jones was a second-round pick, and I had an NFL quarterback coach, quote, he scares the ish out of me. So it's not always perfect evaluation. But my question is, first of all, how did that come together for the 2018 season into the draft the next year. How did that collection of talent just come together on that one side of the ball? Because it's across two coaching staffs.
It is across two coaching staffs, but I think you do have to credit, you know, Dan Mullen and the staff that he had there, because when you're talking about a guy like Jeffrey Simmons, and let's not forget that Jeffrey Simmons was a guy who came out of high school in the state of Mississippi, Noxubee County High School. We've been doing some high school football work this morning here in the studio, but talking about high school football, got into some problems at Noxubee County, had a run-in with a domestic issue, and a lot of people backed off Jeffrey Simmons. Dan Mullen stayed the course with him. And, you know, really kind of, you know, cemented Jeffrey Simmons, said, hey, you know, look, this kid needs another chance. Let's make that happen. And then, of course, when you're talking about a couple other guys, I mean, Mullen's staff, even though it expanded, you know, two different coaching staffs, you've got to give credit to Mullen and his staff, their ability to evaluate talent and then to define talent. And, of course, you know, Simmons, he was a five-star guy coming out of high school. That projected, you know, well into the NFL. But I think all of that comes down to the evaluation process that Dan Mullen and his staff were able to do, which they continue to do at Florida.
And here's the funny thing, though. And I said Chris Jones, you by Fletcher Cox. I mean, to me, the real signatures of that Mississippi State program over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, most of them been on defense. But we all, Dan Mullen and Dak, and, you know, he's spinning it. And I was like, no, man, the defense, well, that's the key in Starkville. So where are they right now? Because last year, I said going into Leach's first season, I said if you put together an all-star team from Texas Tech and Washington State, this Mississippi State defense would be better than he's ever had. What's it going to be for this season?
I think it's going to be a nice defense. And, you know, one of the things, too, that Mullen was able to do, Chuck, about that defense before we leave that, is evaluate guys inside the state of Mississippi. You know, it's like any state. It's an ebb and a flow in recruiting. Some years you have better talent than others. But some really good guys that came out of the state of Mississippi, like Jonathan Banks, who, you know, kind of flew under the radar, yeah, and several others. Mike Leach will have to continue to identify that. This defense this year, you're talking about returning six guys. I've framed it up like this. It's not a group when they come off the bus that they're just going to wow you. You're not going to be intimidated, but they're a group that can really fly to the football. You know, Randy Charlton is a guy out of Central Florida who transferred in, had a really good spring. Look for him to really anchor that defensive line. Almost like seven guys coming back, minus, you know, six plus Charlton. And then you look at Jaden Crumity at defensive end. So they're really set, I think, at least at the ones on the defensive line. You know, Tyrus Wheat's a guy at linebacker. I believe he's going to be at media days next week for Mike Leach. He's a guy that can play sideline to sideline. And then you get into the secondary in Martin Emerson and Emmanuel Forbes. Those are guys that can really get it in the secondary. Yeah, they can absolutely get it. I think the question for Mississippi State is going to be the two deep. You know, what does the depth look like once you get into, you know, a true 12-game season, you get into that SEC crunch. I think they're starting 11, maybe starting, you know, guys, 15 guys can play. It's just, what does that depth look like? It's going to be young and it's going to be untested.
All right. Maybe just from afar, I had the wrong idea all along, but I remember Nathan Pickering during, you mentioned three other guys there. You didn't even say Nathan Pickering. I remember during recruiting, I was like, I got some expectations for this kid. And I keep getting words like, yeah, he's pretty good. And you get that sound effect before, you know, the response, he's pretty good. Is he supposed to be more than this, or was I off 3 years ago?
No, you weren't off. I mean, everybody felt like Nathan Pickering had a chance to be the next guy up, you know, on that defensive front. Maybe not a Fletcher Cox, maybe not a Chris Jones, maybe not even a Montez Sweat, but, you know, somebody that could come in and really be, you know, an all-SEC player, maybe a second-team or third-team guy. Hasn't, transpired into that yet. He is on the two-deep, and he's a guy that you bring up that, yeah, you don't mention him, but he's a guy that needs to play good football and give Mississippi State and Mike Leach and, you know, that depth along that defensive front, because – look, you know this. You can have three good ones, but if you don't have six good ones or even seven or eight, that's where it really matters. And Pickering needs to be that guy. He needs to be in that rotation where when you see him in a ball game, regardless of down and distance, that you don't see a whole lot of drop-off in production along that defensive side. He needs to be that guy. This is that year for him.
All right, Austin Williams, he's a good enough receiver, and he's a senior. Is that why he's going to media days, or what are we supposed to expect? Like, what am I going to deal with when I see Austin Williams? What am I going to ask him?
You know, Austin Williams is a guy, I can remember, you know, covering him in high school football, and he was a nice receiver. And when I say nice, that's not a shot at anybody. I mean, for me, I'm very picky on elite or really, really good. Mm-hmm. Williams was a nice receiver, and he has been a possession-type guy at Mississippi State. And I think he's a guy that, you know, he can catch the football across the middle. He's not a guy that's going to beat you deep. He's just a consistent ball catcher, and I think that's what Mike Leach needs. He needs to be that outlet guy. somebody that on third down, Will Rogers, if he needs to get the football in traffic, he can get it in there, move the chains. And I think that's what Austin Williams gives you. Again, he's not a guy that's going to, you know, he's not a guy that you're going to draw a play up, I think, to win a ball game. He just needs to be consistent, and that's what he's been, you know, during his time at Starkville.
You know, I've talked about Prize Picks and some of those other daily fantasy sites for college football, and, man, I do okay on it. I'll just leave it at that. And it's a guy like Anaya Smith at Texas A&M where he, you know, stuffs stats in five ways. Can that be Jaquavius Marks? Can he be one of those Saturday stat stuffers? Like, and basically what I'm asking you is how much of a workload can he handle?
Well, you know, he led the nation, you know, in receptions by running back last year as a freshman, which, I mean, you're talking about the air raid where Mike Leach throws it a ton. And Will Rogers did a really good job, I think, of checking down to him last year because the receivers just couldn't get separation. And, yeah, I think he can be a guy that as you put it, a stat stuffer. Now, where he's got to improve, and now a lot of this comes on, you know, on the shoulders of the offensive front, is Mississippi State needs to be able to run the ball at key opportunities to make that defense, you know, loosen up a little bit, to make that linebacker walk down where they can create some space in the second level. And he's a guy that can go get it. And he's a guy that's bought into the program. I mean, you look at a lot of this offense, you know, you're looking at sophomore quarterback, sophomore running back, sophomore receiver in Jaden Wiley, sophomore offensive lineman in Charles Cross. It's still a very young offensive unit. But, yeah, Marks is a guy that he needs to have a big season. And while Mike Leach's offense doesn't go through the running back position, he can actually make this offense much better with a big year.
All right, give me about 30 seconds on Malik Heath, because after the bowl game, I was told, like, Chernobyl was his fault. He was on the grassy knoll. Just worst kid ever, needs to be out of the program. Tell me something good about Malik Heath.
Malik Heath, he's an extremely hard worker, extremely intelligent football player. I can remember Heath when he came out of Jackson Callaway High School. That was kind of the same knock, as he didn't have his head on straight, but he was a guy that would wow you with his football ability. And then, of course, that didn't work out the first turn. He went to junior college, comes back. And last year, before the light kind of seemed to come on, everybody kind of said, look, it doesn't look like, you know, Heath's going to be one of these guys where it ever comes on. But it did, and I think I think he had fun in the last part of last year. And he's a guy that, you know, pound for pound can play every Saturday, every snap in the Southeastern Conference, and Mississippi State needs him to have that light stay on between the ears, so to speak, because he can be a difference maker for this team.
Yeah, I don't like when anybody gets judged on what is, I hope, you know, your worst 30-second moment, 60-second moment. I don't think that's fair for anybody. And so I was just looking for a positive comment about Malik Heath, because it was hard to find last December. Appreciate it always, Jake. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Jake Wimberly again, out yonder, ESPN Jackson. And, again, I don't know anything about Malik Heath, except I think he's a pretty good receiver just because I watched him last year. But he was the kid in the bowl game against Tulsa, stepping on the head. And it immediately went digital, and the Twitter mob attacked. And I was like, all I know about Malik Heath is that 30-second clip. And so there's always more to somebody than just those 30 seconds. Hopefully there is. Brian Harsin headed to his first SEC Media Days ever. Now, he was in the South, but that was at Arkansas State, and he did not go to SEC Media Day. So he'll be there as head coach of the Auburn Tigers. I believe that's a Thursday appointment. And he'll be bringing Bo Nix, his junior presumed starting quarterback, and then Owen Popoe, who is going to be running and flying around the field at linebacker for Auburn this season. Want to head out now. Man does a great job covering the Tigers program for 247. It is Auburn beat writer Nathan King. Nathan, brother, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you coming on today. I said presumed starter. I mean, there are other quarterbacks who have taken snaps in NCAA games. There's even a guy who started. But it's okay to assume Bo Nix is going to be announced as the starter, or does that even have to be announced?
I feel like just kind of based on what Brian Harsin, kind of his language and how he talked about his team in the spring, I feel like it's going to be a situation he'll probably just kind of roll with Bo Nix and not really try to make that big of a deal about it.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, I mean, TJ Finley, I think, is a very serious contender for this job. And I only say that because of Bo Nix's shortcomings over the past couple years. His ceiling is obviously very high. I think most people will say that, you know, you look at some of the throws and some of the athletic plays that he makes. And, you know, you can see the potential is there. And that's what this staff wants to do. They want to hone in on that. They want to cut out some of those mistakes, get that footwork right, yada, yada. But that's the reason that they brought in TJ Finley, is because they think they can mold him into an SEC, you know, starter caliber player. So I think it will be a legitimate battle in fall camp. It's one that, like you said, it's pretty safe to assume Bo Nix is going to win right now, but we'll see how things go. And yeah, it'll certainly be a big topic of conversation at media days next week.
A couple games into last year, even though the offensive line was the issue at Georgia, I remember going on the air and I said that Bo Nix would have been better off if he would have never gone to Auburn. Gus Malzahn would have been better off. And it's not because either of them are bad people. It was square peg, round hole. And I got some blowback on that, but by about 5-6 weeks later, it was not very much of a provocative statement anymore. Do you agree with that? And explain to me why you do, if you agree with it.
So on the subject of Nix, I mean, I don't think that Gus Malzahn exactly has done Auburn quarterbacks any favors. That's not, and to your point, that's not anything opinionated. I mean, that's based on fact. You look at, you know, what these quarterbacks have done over the years, regressing. And you talk about Jarrett Stidham, and Bo Nix didn't really take that big of a step either. And the best quarterbacks that Gus Malzahn has had are ones that were either A, not a quarterback to start with at all in Nick Marshall. You can't really take credit for that. Or a guy in Cam Newton that, I mean, hey, it was probably pretty difficult to mess up Cam Newton in that 2010 season. So that's just not Gus Malzahn's thing. And that's fine. Everybody's got their thing. I think Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo are much more of those, you know, quarterback whisperers and developers. So that's a big reason for optimism. And then, you know, for Nix, in terms of coming to Auburn, I mean, I think you probably could have had a little bit better development over the years. Yes, if you had a position coach or quarterbacks coach, offensive coordinator like a Mike Bobo, who has had a better history of developing passers. But, you know, maybe Nix, you know, I think Ohio State and Clemson were his other two coming out of high school. I mean, if he goes there, he's probably not getting the opportunities that he got at Auburn. And, I mean, he started all 24 games over the past 2 years at Auburn. He was the SEC Freshman of the Year in 2019. You certainly aren't seeing him get those opportunities if he goes to those other programs. So I think for Nix, the big thing right now, and I'll ask him this in media days next week, but, I mean, the past is in the past, and it feels like it's kind of a clean slate for him moving forward. Maybe he, you know, is feeling like a new quarterback within this offense, and this year is going to be really big for his future because, like we just talked about, if he's not able to get it going this season, they've got a guy that they are very comfortable that they might be able to plug him right in if Nix isn't able to get the job done.
All right. I've been staring at Starkville for like 5-6 years going, how can an SEC program be short on receivers, for gosh sakes? And now I look at Auburn, I'm like, oh, Auburn is short on receivers. And that's a really good SEC program. Talk about the impact that potentially the impact that Demetrius Robertson can have.
Yeah, for sure. You're getting a guy that you are hoping becomes that number one receiver. Now, Robertson hasn't shown that since his freshman season at Cal when he was working with Jake Spavital in that offense. And obviously he was really, really successful. Really, that's the only time in his career where he's really shown the makings of a five-star prospect. He was the number one wide receiver in the country coming out of high school. Never really found that kind of footing at Georgia. Now, he was successful at Georgia, like a second or third receiver. He made plenty of great plays. He was a good SEC receiver. Auburn now is going to look to him to take on a little bit bigger of a role. And it was a guy that really made a lot of sense for them to go get a veteran receiver, because you look at what Auburn's got right now, and you're exactly right. This is the lowest production they've had returning at Auburn at wide receiver since 1995. It's a bunch of really talented players, a bunch of guys that are former four stars, you know, all, you know, everything. They're a bunch of talented high school prospects. They just have little to no experience at this point. And so it makes sense to lean on a guy like Robertson while these guys get it figured out. But that's another thing it'll be interesting to talk to Brian Harsin about, because he was not shy in spring practices in saying, our receivers are holding us back right now. Now, they dealt with some injuries, but he was saying, you know, their inability to execute at times holds back the offense as a whole. And you best believe with the offensive line issues they have, that's going to continue into fall camp and into the season if they can't get it worked out. So wide receiver, definitely one of the biggest positions to watch at Auburn moving into fall camp. And Demetrius Robertson, Auburn's hoping, is going to kind of give them a little bit better of a leg up than they had in spring ball.
Wrapping up with Nathan King, get him on Twitter, at NathanKing247. I know it's him because he got a blue check beside his name. All right, J.J. Pegues, what is he?
he is a defensive tackle at the moment. Auburn just changed their roster, updated their roster yesterday, and so he is now officially a defensive tackle on Auburn's roster, though he made that switch in spring camp. I don't expect him to do – I'm doing like a most valuable player series, and he was kind of at the bottom of the list, and people were getting pretty mad about that, and I understand that a little bit, but you look at the names ahead of him right now and his experience. He's never played defensive tackle before. Is he a phenomenal athlete? Yes. Could he get it figured out? Yes. Does Auburn think he could be an NFL player at defensive tackle? Yes. But to get that all figured out in time for fall camp and in time for the season, I'm not necessarily – holding my breath on that. So right now Auburn's just looking to him to bring in some extra depth. They had an unfortunate injury at defensive tackle in spring ball with Jeremiah Wright tearing his ACL. So kind of substituting in J.J. Pegues. But I'm crossing my fingers that we're going to see him in some tight end packages over the next couple years still to be able to swap over to that other side of the ball just because he was such a fun player to watch last season.
Yeah, and I just, you know, when you have a new coaching staff come in and I say, quote, it's just spring, that's when you try something. And so I don't know if it's going to stick or what, but you said you got an updated roster, and so we'll roll with that. Go back a level, and I mentioned Owen Popose going to Media Days. Is he a really good ball player? Or is he that next level sort of guy? Because I think through the first 2 years, I mean, obviously the advanced billing was what it was, and for 2 years he's been a pretty good ball player. But that's kind of been what it is.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, Auburn's had this recent history of linebackers under Travis Williams that were really, really able to be successful. So we'll see if that's able to continue. And his pairing with Zakobi McClain was wonderful last season. And I think you're exactly right that he is almost at that peak. I think Auburn staff thinks that he can be this best player on this defense. That's been apparent since the first day he was on campus. I mean, a five-star prospect. He can do a little bit of everything. He looks the part of an NFL linebacker. So now Auburn's saying, all right, you step up in this junior season and go out there and prove it. My thing with Owen Papo, I think Auburn will be happy if he's gone after this season. And I just mean that in the way that if he has the kind of season they think he can have, he's going to be an NFL player. He's going to leave after his junior year. He's going to have a massive impact. Obviously, they're hoping they have him for another 2 years. But, I mean, I'm just on a personal thing. I saw Owen Papo in Walmart like 2 days ago, and the dude is just absolutely huge. He looks like a defensive end playing linebacker. So
they want him to be Roquan Smith. They want him to have that sort of season where, dude, there ain't no question.
Exactly. And that's a guy he was compared to a lot coming out of high school. And so he's developed, you know, over the years. He's gotten even bigger. This new strength and conditioning program for Auburn has been no joke here in the offseason. A bunch of these guys have been able to bulk up, and Papo's been a beneficiary of that. So, yeah, another guy. Really excited. It was actually a pretty decent Media Days pairing. I was worried we were going to get kind of a boring one, but him and Nix, I'm pretty excited to talk to them next week, and I think both of them will have some pretty good insight about the offense and defense, respectively.
All right, last question, well, last guy I'm going to ask you about is Roger McCreary, and I think he could be the best corner in the conference this year. But I also know there are fans of other programs listening right now through Art the Network. They don't know who Roger McCreary is. And by the way, that's not a them problem. He is about the most anonymous, unbelievably talented kid in the secondary anywhere in the conference.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Pro Football Focus actually yesterday put out the top 10 cornerback duos in the country. And right now they've got Roger McCreary and Nehemiah Pritchett as the number three.
Wow.
In the nation. And that just goes to show Nehemiah had a really good season in pure coverage last year. But that goes to your talking point about McCreary. We were in Atlanta last night and got to chat with Zach Etheridge a little bit. And I'll have a story on what he said about Roger McCreary tomorrow. But he said he's absolutely just leaning on this guy. Everyone in that secondary respects everything that Roger McCreary does. He just goes to work every day. Very quiet guy, not necessarily that vocal leader. Zach Etheridge is trying to get him to come out of his shell a little bit. But that's kind of the identity of what you maybe want your number one corner to be, a guy whose name doesn't come up that much. And that's what happened last season. We didn't hear that much about Roger McCreary, and that's what you want out of a corner because either A, they weren't throwing his way, or B, when they were, you know, the ball wasn't getting completed. And his name came up when he had those three interceptions. So he's finding his way around the ball a little bit better. He's improved every season. He was really good as a freshman 2 years ago, and obviously huge for them for him to come back. He could have been a mid-round draft choice. He was kind of in the fourth fifth round range, and now he's eyeing that, you know, first or second round. So absolutely a guy that was a started his high school career as a low two-star prospect, ended up being a three-star out of Mobile, didn't have a ton of high-end offers, and now might have an opportunity, like you said, to be the best corner in the conference. So Zach Etheridge definitely going to be leaning on him this year. That's the number one guy in his room, and that says something because this secondary is very, very deep this season. Looks like Roger McCreary might be their best guy, like you're saying.
Well, I appreciate the time and the insight, brother. Talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good week.
All right. And again, Nathan King from 247. Seems surprised that we're going to talk to him next week. So, Dan, tell him we're going to talk to him next week. Talent at corner coming back in the SEC. Kyrie Elam, really, really, really good. And everybody, like we're on in Little Rock. There's somebody listening in Little Rock right now. He's going, oh, yeah, Kyrie Elam. He's awesome. Ricks. And Stingley, whoo, they're both awesome. We're on in Lexington, Kentucky. There's somebody listening in Lexington going, oh, I know those two guys. Roger McCreary? There are people in Auburn who know Roger McCreary. I don't expect that there are a lot of people, and I don't know how this is possible, but Little Rock, Lexington, wherever. We're on in Ocala and Gainesville. Roger McCreary, oh, yeah, he's that guy who plays for Auburn. That may be it. Nobody, and a lot of folks don't know who he is. Almost no one has a real understanding just what kind of season he had. Now, might Stingley be a better corner, but by technique and skill set and competition and stopwatch, okay, yeah, maybe. If you saw the season that was put out on the field last year with a whole lot of talent around him, everybody on LSU's defense, you could say the same thing, whole lot of talent around him. What kind of year did he have? Well, nobody had a great year for LSU. I think it was statistically the worst. So that's what I'm saying. That you got to produce. It can't be like the College Football Playoff Committee who said, oh, you don't have to actually do anything. As long as we think that you're going to be great, just play four or five games. We'll put you in the playoffs. Just what we thought you would be, that's enough. No, you got to go out and produce in the Southeastern Conference. And coming off of last season and the skill set and the fact that he is back for his senior year, there's something about grown men in the secondary, and he is definitely one of them. So I had not seen that Pro Football Focus ranking of cornerback duos, but that is high cotton, no doubt about it. All right, we're going to take a break. We will come back, wrap up on a Thursday next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I didn't get in this profession to be somebody. I got in this profession to do something. And, you know, for me, I've always said, and I tell this to our society, you're either trying to be somebody else or you're trying to do something. And I think from my end, you know, what I love about football is to teach.
Matt Campbell, head coach of the Iowa State Cyclones, not Dan Campbell, head coach of the Detroit Lions. And that could have been the case, but he's like, no, I'm good here. I'm still doing whatever it is I'm doing at Iowa State. Because he's had a lot of success, and he probably has them. The Big 12 has changed greatly. It used to be the who can fling it around and score the most points. Everybody was Gundy. And now Gundy is Gundy, and most other teams are playing some semblance of like Texas Tech is different now. We all get that, right? It's not the Pirate or the Pirate's quarterback. It's a guy who likes to run the ball, play defense, and punch you a little bit. You know, Gary Patterson? Patterson's looking around and going, finally. We get to run the ball, play defense some. So that's what you get from Big 12 Media Days again with Coach Matt Campbell. Dan Matthews will be popping in here in just a couple of minutes. But right now, I'm going to wrap it up with the closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments. Presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
Yeah, it is. No matter where you are in the Deep South, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Bama, wherever you need legal expertise, you need Alexander Shannara and Associates. This is bad news. I was going to say this is either news or it's bad. No, it's bad news. It's forced news. It's news that has to be next week. A year from now? Mm-mm. But for next week, this has to be the news. Southeastern Conference announced this morning, hey, SEC fans, you can enjoy wall-to-wall coverage of the SEC Media Days on the SEC Network, July 19th through the 22nd. 46 hours of original programming beginning Monday at 8 a.m. If you choose to visit the event, a designated area will be available outside the Hyatt Regency Birmingham Winfrey Hotel for fans interested in observing the arrival of their favorite coaches and players to Media Days. Due to COVID guidelines, the area will require that fans remain distanced from those who are entering and exiting. Fans will not be permitted inside the hotel, and there will be no autograph opportunities during the 2021 event. There will be fans checking into the Winfrey so that they can gain entrance to the hotel and the media area. I promise you it's going to happen, because if you've got a hotel key, you can get in. And I promise you by Wednesday, the Winfrey is going to be wised up to the fact, and they're going to move one of those scanners, those guns, outside the hotel to make sure it's still a valid room key. Because there's going to be fans that check in on Monday, and then it's going to be like a master's badge where, oh, I've got the room key for Monday, you have it for Tuesday. There's an area outside. There's like eight doors and then a revolving door and then an area to the side. That's where the fans are going to be told that you have to stay, and they are very clear about this. It will be a distance. You can't observe. You cannot get autographs or photos. That's how it has to be this year. So you can still be there, but you're going to be outside the facility. And for Saban's Day on Wednesday, it's still going to be a little bit of a zoo, I promise you. And then Thursday for Brian Harsin, his first as Auburn coach. I'm wondering how that's going to go. It'll still be zoo-ish, but again, it'll be tougher because it'll be all on the outside of the hotel. That is my closing argument, brought to you by the law offices, Alexander, Shannara, and Associates. What up, Dan?
I just remember a couple of years ago, Auburn's Day, and some lady with, like, whatever the little miniature version of a poodle is, they had painted the dog.
I saw that.
To look like a tiger. And as I was getting on the escalator, I looked, got on the escalator, went up the escalator, turned around, and I think I even said it out loud, poor dog.
Yeah, don't paint your dog.
No, don't do that.
There are certain rules in life. One of them is don't paint your dog.
No, absolutely, yeah. Please don't. We know how much you love your school, but don't show how much you love your school on something that doesn't have any control about how much you love your school. Remember how one of my life rules that I have on the side of my refrigerator, so you've got the big Maytag in there. I've got the little miniature in here, and so I'm kind of building mine up, and one of them is know who you are. And I love the campaign right now that our good friend at Vanderbilt, Clark Lee, and his staff have right now. And that is, and Barton Simmons was the one who I think came up with this, come get developed. Because Vanderbilt knows that they're not going to be getting the 4 and 5 stars, at least yet. Maybe they will eventually break through there. It's going to be unlikely that's not the case. But that they're going to be looking at players where they're saying, hey, there's a lot of upside there. There's something, yeah, maybe this kid's only played football for a couple of years. We can work with that. He's not, you know, he's got the body, he's got the athleticism.
You got to project. You got to have vision.
Absolutely, you do. And
which
that's
is why you got Barton Simmons as
that's
GM.
Why, yeah, exactly. That's why Barton Simmons is there running your personnel department. But the fact that Vanderbilt knows that, at least Clark Lee says, hey, guys, look, we're banging our head against a wall. It's kind of like, you ever seen We Are Marshall? Remember how Matthew McConaughey as Jack Lingle, he's going around trying to recruit players, and there's even one part where he goes, yeah, hey, we really like your son. And the son comes in and everybody starts clapping and he's wearing West Virginia gear as he says, yeah, we're not going to be getting these guys. So eventually they go get the basketball player, the soccer player, the other types of players. Vanderbilt doesn't necessarily have to do that. But at the same time, though, too, it's for them to at least make themselves unique and also make the recruit unique, where the recruit says, hey, they have interest in me. They want to see me become a better football player, where then kind of the, I guess you could say, unintentional negative recruiting against everybody else is, why do you want to go there and be a number? You can come here and be unique.
Yeah, Vanderbilt, I'll go back to your very first point there. You said they could get 4 and 5-star recruits, but most likely path is to get the 2 stars and the 3-star whose dad went to Vanderbilt, and so they got the in. And you're right about that. Let me go ahead and address that first part. When Vanderbilt starts getting 4-star and 5-star kids, Clark Lee ain't the coach there anymore. And anybody who, like, he'll get the Shane Beamer effect for anybody. Shane Beamer got hired at South Carolina because of something that happened 11 years ago, that he was there in 2010. That will be the effect. And I'm not like James Franklin. He took some recruits from Georgia. He took a lot of recruits from Tennessee. He did an amazing job And he wasn't getting classes full of 4-star and 5-star kids. And that is the most, I mean, it was the biggest Houdini job I've seen in my life. It's Kansas State, what was out in the old Big Eight, except even more difficult because this was a more competitive conference. But even James Franklin wasn't getting 4-star. And I don't know if he ever got a 5-star. When that happens, everybody involved rides the wave straight out of Nashville, I promise you. James Franklin, what was his biggest accomplishment as Vanderbilt head coach? Becoming Penn State head coach. Wraps it up on a Thursday, folks. Appreciate everybody. Dan back there doing a good job. Matt as well. Everybody listening, the guests, thank y'all. 22 hours from right now, be back with more college football conversation right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a 3-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com and then call us for a free in-home consultation.